You're listening to PetLifeRadio.com.
That's it. You're madder than a junkyard dog, and you're not going to take it anymore. Your feathers are ruffled, your dander's up, and you've got a definite bone to pick. Welcome to Pet Peeves, the show that lets you dig through the dirt and unleash your passion for pets. Why let sleeping dogs lie when you can take the bull by the horns and let the fur fly? So get your claws out and get ready to rattle some cages on Pet Peeves with your host, pet expert, and award-winning author, Amy Shoja.
Hey there, and welcome to Pet Peeves on Pet Life Radio. I'm your host, Amy Shoja, and today I'm talking about some doggone good writing. Here comes my rant of the week. Now, as a nonfiction author and journalist, I love research. I get lost in it sometimes, and I pride myself on accurate reporting. I love reading fiction, too, but I don't have all that much downtime in my schedule, so readings become sort of a guilty pleasure. When I do indulge, I want to be pulled into the author's world where I can laugh out loud, weep, or gnash my teeth over the hero's angst. And folks, if an author gets something wrong about pets, it jars me out of that world and leaves me hissing mad. For instance, one best-selling author's vet tech heroine gives a lethal dose of Tylenol to her search and rescue dog. Ouch! I've also read novels that perpetuate the Lassie or the Cujo myth. I just roll my eyes and close the book. Most books relegate pets to window dressing in the first and last chapter. No food or potty breaks in between for weeks as the hero globetrots after the villain. I keep waiting for the scene where Sheba explodes and the hero has to call the carpet cleaners. Now, I know it's fiction, but give me a break. That's why I'm delighted to welcome a particularly pet-savvy author to the show. James Rollins is the author of six thrillers in the best-selling Sigma Force series. The blockbuster movie novelization of Indiana Jones and the Kingdom of the Crystal Skull, and his sixth individual adventure thriller, Altar of Eden, features a veterinarian. This was just released. Rollins is also writing the Jake Ransom series for kids and adults. Oh, and he gets the science and the animal details right because he's a veterinarian. So come, sit, stay, and we'll talk animals, writing, and research after these messages from our sponsors.
Okay, time to call off the dogs. Pet Peeves will be back with more biting topics right after we kibble a little with our sponsors.
Pawfume Dog Grooming and Finishing Spray is proud to be a new sponsor of Pet Life Radio. Pawfume Super Long Lasting Sprays are available in four unique fragrances. Each Pawfume spray is fortified with the finest conditioners and detanglers to make combing out your dog more fun. Pawfume retails for only $2 per 6-ounce bottle. Pawfume is available nationwide at all Dollar General and Family Dollar stores. Why pay more to have your dog smell great? Pawfume, Pawfume.
This valuable information comes from your pet. There's nothing like a wagging tail or friendly paw to lift your mood. They're therapeutic and make us feel good. Studies show pets even reduce stress, prevent heart disease, lower blood pressure, and fight depression. So there you have it. Pets are a daily dose of good health and happiness. Pets Add Life. To learn more, visit petsaddlife.org.
Hello! I'm Deborah Wolf, and I'm inviting you to my animal party on Pet Life Radio. The dress code? Come as you are. Pajamas, a tux, you can even go naked like your pets. Unleash your party animal at my animal party. Guests you know from Animal Planet, TV, radio, the news, and bookstores will be joining me. And that's because after I won Best Pet Radio in America from the DWAA, I got my paw on the door and I met a lot of amazing people. And the best of the best are going to be coming to the party. They're coming to party with us. So join us at the animal party. Don't miss the party.
Every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com. Let's talk pets on PetLifeRadio.com. We know you're foaming at the mouth to get back to pet peeves. So here's Amy with some more tail-tying, fur-flying fun.
Welcome back to Pet Peeves on Pet Life Radio. Now, past shows have featured the veterinary geneticist Dr. Leslie Lyons about breeding for health. We've learned about canine cloning from Lou Hawthorne of BioArts International and discussed animal research with Dr. Patricia Olson of Morris Animal Foundation and Susan Little from Wynn Feline Foundation. We've even talked parrot behavior with behaviorist Dr. Susan Friedman and Kashmir Saiki. So folks, if you're interested in any one or all of these subjects, or if you just enjoy a really great story, you're going to love Altar of Eden. I just finished the book last night, and I am delighted to welcome author James Rollins to the show. Thank you so much for taking the time, Jim, for joining us.
Oh, well, thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
What I like to always do with my guest first off is ask a little about your own pets. What dogs and cats or other critters share your life?
Well, I've got a golden retriever and a dachshund. They both rescue kids. I actually still do a little bit of veterinary medicine, though I do write full-time. I work with a group that traps feral cats in the Sacramento area, and they bring them into the shelter once a month, and I spend about 8 hours spaying and neutering them. It's basically 8 hours of removing genitalia. That's what I do with my veterinary degree now. And but since I work at the shelter, I'm unfortunately a lot of times it's hard walking through those wards without ending up with a pet or two that comes home.
I understand. You have
to end up with these two. But I also do have a parrot myself, a parrot named Igor, which if you've read the book, then you know Igor is featured.
I hope Igor has more feathers than the one in the book.
Yes, he's not a feather picking parrot, so he's got all of his got all his feathers. But he's probably about as smart as the parrot featured in that book.
Well, don't tell him that though.
No, don't park during this conversation since he has a tendency to interrupt with some loud squawking.
Oh, that happened on some of the parrot shows that we did too, and it's not unusual for my cat to walk across the keyboard or the German Shepherd to tell me that there's a UPS guy at the door. So actually it fits in with the show pretty well. And I wanted to ask you, Jim, maybe why is a better question. Does an evidence-based science guy make that leap into writing make-believe and thrillers, no less? How did you get into this?
Well, you know, I've always been a reader as a kid. I grew up with three brothers and three sisters, and I became sort of the storyteller of the family. It's what my mom called, I was basically the liar of the family. I was always trying to, terrorize my brothers and sisters with strange stories. And so that was always a part of my personality. But I knew I wanted to be a veterinarian since third grade. And, I particularly remember getting that essay that all you get in about third grade is, what do you want to be when you grow up? And I remember as a third grader sitting at my desk and having a moment of moral dilemma. I knew I wanted to be a veterinarian, wanted to fill out the essay like that, but didn't know how to spell it. I thought, well, I know how to spell police, I know how to spell fireman, but, I really want to be a veterinarian. So the one thing all third graders hate to do, I actually got the dictionary and looked it up. I was from third grade that determined to be a veterinarian. So that's the other side of my personality. But when I got to vet school and the first year was out of vet school, very busy. So, I always thought I'd like to write, but never thought you could make a career out of that. And kept saying, one of these days I'm going to write, one of these days I'm going to write. So I started to eventually figure that I'm going to run out of one of these days. If I'm going to write, I better write. And so I started to write these stories, sort of crazy stories. And my clients eventually realized I was writing, mostly because I had posters in my lobby, get your cat spayed, get a free book. Dr. Jim, you're a veterinarian, or shouldn't you be writing about a veterinarian? Shouldn't you be?
That was my next question. Why did it take you so long to include a veterinarian?
Yeah, it's just, I didn't really want to write about a veterinarian. I was working 14, 16, 18 hours a day as a vet. I didn't want to go home necessarily and write about a vet. To me, my writing was an escape. It was a way of getting out of my head a little bit to recharge those batteries. But eventually, once I stopped practicing full-time, as my career got a little busier, I began thinking, well, maybe I could write about a veterinarian. But it was sort of an unconscious thing, is that over time, all these animals started creeping into my writing. And a fan sent me this letter at one point and said, Jim, how come right here in your series, all your main characters have these animal sidekicks? You've got an orphan jaguar cub. You've got a wolf rescue dog. You've got some other animal there. And I'm thinking, you know what?
Highland, there was a terrier in one of the books.
Exactly. Rufus was his name. I just realized that the time these animals started creeping into my writing was the time I stopped practicing full time. So that other passion of mine about loving animals and veterinary medicine started to seep into my writing unconsciously. You know, it took somebody outside to sort of see that happen. There's that sort of adage that, you know, writers, when they write, they're somewhat naked on the page. And I never quite believed that until I got that letter, that somebody sort of figured that out. Years went by, and I think I thought I was ready to actually write a thriller with a veterinarian in the lead, and that became Altar of Eden.
Well, I know even before this, though, you've always included sort of speculative science in your thrillers. You've had, you know, the leading characters in the one of your major series, the Sigma Force series, these are scientist guys, right?
Exactly. I mean, I've always got a science background. My pre-vet school degree was in evolutionary biology. You'll see a lot of that theme through a lot of my novels. I play with, you know, what happens if you manipulate genetics, what happens if, you know, you start to doing strange things with animals. So you'll see a lot of that in my novels.
Well, I love your animal characters in Altar of Eden, from the comparatively normal Bert the Bloodhound. And I love Bert because he's a dog and he's a bloodhound and he acts like a hunting dog is supposed to. But then you have, you know, the saber-toothed cats, the monkeys, the parrot that makes feather pecking seem like kind of a mild affliction. So I've got this kind of a chicken-egg question, if you'll forgive me. Do you plot before you choose the animals, or did the plot evolve from the animal characters?
They usually come about because of the animals. It's, you know, I have the idea of these hyper-intelligent animals. Mostly, again, because Igor is actually in the book. You know, a lot of this was based on Igor. I read a book called The Parrot Who Owns Me, which dealt with parrot intelligence, how intelligent parrots really are. You know, and you've had discussions, it sounds like, previously with other scientists about parrot intelligence. So I started to deal with, you know, what happens if you start manipulating that? Some of the Defense Department's research scientists are looking at ways of enhancing human intelligence to basically create the equivalent of a super soldier. And so I thought, well, what if those early experiments were done with animals, and instead heightening animals' intelligence beyond what is already considerable intelligence, what might happen? I'm always fascinated. It's just us, I guess, last week or so, maybe the week before, that I had heard about one of the nations that are trying to declare dolphins to be non-human persons. That, you know, the new
yes.
study for intelligence in dolphins is such that we really can't really consider them as animals. I mean, they're so intelligent that they're brushing against the level of human intelligence. So, you know, we maybe need to consider rights for dolphins, and the way to do that is to reclassify them from an animal to a non-human person. So I just love playing in that entire field of, you know, where is a line drawn between human intelligence and animal intelligence, and about the human-animal bond? What is that connection humans have to animals? Why do we always have animals around us? You know, why does that, it seems odd that sometimes I look at my dog and I'm thinking, why is this wild creature running around my house? You know, why do we have this bond with animals? Again, something I like to play with in my novel.
Well, and there's this whole argument, did dogs and cats, did man domesticate them, or did they actually take that first step into the human ring of firelight and join us as partners in the hunt or in, you know, protecting the grain or whatever? It seemed to be more of a combination, that a meeting of the mind, so to speak, rather than us going out and specifically saying, okay, I like this one, I'm going to domesticate this one.
Yeah, I don't see that happen. I think you're correct. I think the more natural way dog behavior is, to go into that wolfish ancestor of the current pet dog, I could see them coming to that fire to, you know, beg for food, to, you know, try to get food, and then that's the way the introduction of animals into humankind occurred. I don't see somebody in the past, you know, grabbing a wild animal and bending it to its will. I think there was a more cooperative nature. It possibly started from the animals taking that first step.
Sure. Now, I have to say that thus far, Altar of Eden is my favorite. Now, I do pets all the time, so I love this. And I have to tell you, it's almost a resource for me for future columns, because there's so much great research background in it. And I have to know, you wrote 3 books this year, and I understand from some of the what I've looked at on your website and elsewhere that you're planning 3 for this next year. How do you divide your time between allocating for research compared to the actual writing?
Well, you know, as you mentioned in your introduction, I love doing research. I'm fascinated by a wide gamut of subjects, and I can get lost in that. So when I'm working on a novel, I actually have to limit myself to 90 days.
Uh-huh.
I will allow myself to do 90 days of research and outline the story, but on the 91st day, I actually have to start putting words on paper. Or otherwise, I'll just keep researching, thinking I'm working, when actually I'm just playing, and so books will never get done.
Oh, that sounds familiar. Well, speaking of time, we do need to take a commercial break, and when we come back, we'll continue our conversation with James Rollins on more thrilling topics.
Okay, time to call off the dogs. Pet Peeves will be back with more biting topics right after we kibble a little with our sponsors.
It's time for school for you and your friends, your furry best friends. Train your dog the fun and easy way with Teacher's Pet Sessions. Teacher's Pet host Pia Silvani teaches you step-by-step how to train your dog the fun and easy way. You get 8 30-minute live audio training sessions, complete transcripts of each session, plus a basic training manual to get you and your dog off to a great start. Training begins the moment you bring your dog home. Teacher's Pet Sessions offers positive reinforcement training to shape your dog's behavior and encourages upbeat, enthusiastic responses to ensure that your dog will enjoy learning. Teacher's Pet Sessions dog training is fun at both ends of the leash. So listen, learn, and laugh with your dog with Teacher's Pet Sessions. Get your copy of Teacher's Pet Sessions Volume 1 today. To order, go to teacherspetsessions.com.
Hi, this is Pia Silvani, your host. Bring your dog, tug toy, and treats, and get ready to have some fun.
teacherspetsessions.com.
Greetings, human. What planet am I on?
Welcome to Pet Planet. Here's a copy of Pet Planet magazine, Florida's most informative and fun pet resource magazine. It features heartwarming stories and informative articles from local and national pet experts.
Excellent.
Pet Planet magazine offers Operation Planet Rescue, helping rescued pets find new homes. And it's available at 500 locations in South and Central Florida and 24/7 on the internet at petplanetmagazine.com. If you're out and about with your pet, you may be featured in Paparazzi, candid pictures of you and your pet. For up-to-date pet-friendly events, activities, and pet-related services and products, Pet Planet Magazine is your final destination.
I shall take this magazine home with me.
Back to your home planet?
No, to my condo in Boca.
Pet Planet Magazine. Check them out at www.petplanetmagazine.com or 352-394-8578. It's out of this world.
Coast to coast and around the world, it's O-Behave with Arden Moore. Find out why cats and dogs do the things they do and get the latest buzz from wagging tongues and tails in Rin Tin Tinseltown. From famous pet experts and best-selling authors to television and movie stars, you'll get great tail-wagging pet tips and have a fur-flying fun time. O-Behave with America's pet edutainer, Arden Moore. Every week on demand, this is the place for a special paparazzi treat. Only on PetLifeRadio.com.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
We know you're foaming at the mouth to get back to pet peeves, so here's Amy with some more tail-tying, fur-flying fun.
We're back, and again, speaking with best-selling thriller author James Rollins about his latest thriller. Now, folks, the newest book, Altar of Eden, touches, as Jim has said, on animal intelligence, but also on cloning, genetics, fractals, magnetite, the Bagdad Zoo, acres. Oh, gosh, there's so much in here. Now, I don't want to spoil things for listeners who haven't read the book yet, but I'd love to go through these maybe one at a time. If you could give us just a little taste about the most interesting or surprising tidbits you learned about each one of these that maybe didn't even make it into the book that you're saving for later.
Sure.
So what about, we talked a little already about animal intelligence. What about the cloning thing? That's very cool, and it's kind of scary besides.
Well, that ACRES that you mentioned, which is the Audubon Center for Research into Endangered Species, they're trying to preserve endangered species by doing cutting-edge genetics. They're actually cloning animals in an attempt to preserve that genetic stock or to increase breeding programs. And so, you know, to me, cloning has a very appropriate place. I think at this point there's still some scary things going on that. ACRES is actually has cloned a cat, which I just love. It's a New Orleans-based facility, and they named this cat Ditto, this cloned cat, which I just thought was amusing. But actually, they're doing some cutting-edge procedures on new cloning methods. And currently, and this is not in the book, and I'm a little bit on the fence whether this is a good thing or bad thing, is that just to fund their research, because they're struggling to keep this going. And I think it's a great organization. One of the things they're doing to help fund this organization is they're now offering cloning services to the public. So that if you have a cat you want to clone, they will clone it for you.
See, this is what BioArts was doing also with cloning the dogs. You know,
right.
And I think I'm a little on the fence there too, because if you clone Saint Fluffy, it's maybe identical, but it's not going to be the same pet. It's not going to be the same emotional relationship or even
not
the same.
At all.
Yeah.
You know, you look at two twins that are raised apart. You know, they have a lot of similarities, but they're going to be sometimes very different personalities that are going to arise. My other concern is that when they clone these animals, oftentimes their DNA is still old. Is that DNA, as a person ages, the telomeres at the end of your DNA strands have a tendency to fray, and that's what causes aging. And so when you take genetic material from an adult animal, stick it into an ovum, and produce a cloned animal, that DNA is still the DNA of an older creature, and the telomeres are frayed. And so you're not even getting a perfect example of the pet you had. You're getting an older version that's locked into a younger body. And to me, there's still some questions whether that's a good thing to do.
I think there were questions about Dolly originally, too, whether the sheep was going to age differently because of this.
Exactly. And, you know, I still think that question is still unanswered at this point.
Well, moving on then to the genetics and the DNA, there was a lot of research in the book and analysis of the genes to figure out just what was going on with these mutated animals that were found. Can you give a little bit more about that? What do you find so fascinating about that?
Well, what I find fascinating about that is that, you know, only a small percentage of our DNA is functional. The rest of it's considered to be junk. And by the rest of it, I mean, we're talking probably like 85 to 90% of our DNA is considered to be junk DNA, has no functionality to it. It's only a very small percentage of that DNA that actually produces us. So the question is, what is going on with that rest of that DNA? What's locked in that rest of that DNA? And what we're finding out is that, you know, there's some of our evolutionary past is locked in that DNA. You know, there's a condition called atavism, or what's basically is genetic throwbacks, where a trait thought lost to a species, such as, snakes don't have limbs anymore, but occasionally you'll see a snake born with a fully functional reptilian limb from a little mutation in that genetic code. So I love the fact that somewhere in our genetic code, in our DNA itself, is locked our evolutionary past. And what if you could unlock that? And again, that became sort of a seed for this novel.
Right. I love we talked a lot about the animal characters in this, but there are also hominid characters that are these kind of genetic throwbacks. It was just fascinating. And you talked about the way that they communicated, and this had to do with the magnetite deposits that are in the brain of, I didn't realize this, reading this, I didn't realize that everybody has this. I thought it was just the birds, and they were using this for migratory purposes, directionality. We know pets find their way home over amazing distances sometimes and speculate maybe that's part of the thing. But tell us more about what is magnetite? How does this fit into, why is it there?
Well, that's a good question, because magnetite is a magnetic, little magnetic crystals, and they're in bird brains, and they're believed that they're what allows avians to align to the magnetic fields of Earth so that they can migrate. And for a while, we were thinking this was unique to avian species, but newest research shows that almost all mammals have some degree of these crystals in their skulls, including humans. So my question, again, in raising this novel is, why do we have those crystals there? Does this since we all have, all mammals have these crystals, is, and this is sort of picking up on those magnetic waves, is there a way that maybe we're all animals align a little bit together? Is there a way that maybe this is a way we can communicate? There's a whole mysterious human-animal bond. Is this maybe a source of that bond? Of course, it's all speculative, but it's based upon a real science that, you know, humans do have these crystals in our brains. The question is why? Are they functional? What if you increase the number of those crystals, what might happen? So, again, just fun things to play with and to think about.
Well, and then you also have actual historic things that have happened and interweave those in the story as well. The Baghdad Zoo that opens the novel and finishes the novel as well, kind of full circle there. Tell us a little bit about that for listeners who aren't aware that there even was or is a zoo in the Middle East.
Right, there was a zoo in Baghdad, and during the Iraqi war, the Revolutionary Guard and U.S. infantry had made a major battle right across that zoo and ended up breaking walls, breaking cages open. A lot of the animals escaped into the city. Also, a lot of the people went into those zoos, stole a lot of the animals, sometimes for food, sometimes to be sold in the black market. There was a book I read about the sort of very heroic attempt to preserve the animals of the zoo and to rebuild the zoo after the war. And I just thought when I read that book that, you know, someday I'd like to touch upon that. You know, what happened to the animals that escaped? What happened to the animals that were taken? Is there a story there? And so that, you know, expanded into this novel.
Okay. I want to segue just a moment here because you are one of the founders of the International Thriller Writers. In fact, that's how we met and we're connected there. I would love listeners to learn a little bit more about this organization. How did it come about? And tell a little bit about the organization, the website, Thriller Fest. It's open to the public. Give us a lowdown.
Sure. Well, the International Thriller Writers started because, you know, all different genres have their own writing organizations. The science fiction writers have their Science Fiction Writers of America. The mystery writers have the Mystery Writers of America. Thriller writers, we really never had a home. We were always considered sort of the ugly stepchild of the Mystery Writers of America. You know, they would tolerate us coming to their conferences, but we had to sit at the kids' table. So we thought, well, you know, we need to recognize that we are a viable, very successful, you know, genre of this industry, and maybe we should put ourselves together and band together for our own. Basically, it's a fraternal organization that we, you know, with a lot of camaraderie that occurs. We help each other out. We have a program with ITW that helps debut authors sort of get their foot off the ground. We help unpublished authors try to break into the industry. We support each other as much as we can. So it's a great organization. We have Thriller Fest every summer. We're having our fourth conference this summer in New York. It's a big conference where we have teach classes on writing. We have different panels with various best-selling authors. It's a fun event. We also give out awards during this event for the best thriller of the year. So it's a great organization. I'm very proud to have been instrumental in bringing that organization to life.
It's a great organization. I think I'm going back for my third time this summer, and it's like I heard somebody say last year, it's like summer camp for writers. It's just a wonderful time.
It is that much fun.
Yeah. You don't see each other all year long and everybody's busy. And, you know, writers, we kind of sit in our own room and do our own thing. And then if you're forced to get out, it's usually for publicity. So this is just a let your hair down and meet and talk and schmooze. And it's a wonderful time. Before we're running close to time here, but I do want to ask you what's important for listeners to know about James Rollins, his life, his work.
Oh, well, first of all, you know, I'm trying to break out Altar of Eden as the first veterinary thriller. You know, there's been enough medical thrillers, there's been enough legal thrillers. It's time for the veterinarian to step up and have his own subgenre of thriller writing. But from myself, you know, I just love writing. It's exciting. I love animals. I try to incorporate both those together. But my main goal when I write is to entertain. You know, hopefully when you close that book, you're left with a little something to think about afterwards on some of these issues we raised during our conversation today. But again, ultimately, I want to entertain.
Okay, so bottom line, are there going to be more books featuring Dr. Lorna and Jack? Because, I mean, that last chapter at the Baghdad Zoo, it was kind of like that science fiction egg that cracks and the end with a question mark comes up.
I wrote this book to be a standalone. It wasn't supposed to continue since I'm already doing a series. But, you know, I've sort of fallen in love with Lorna and with Jack and with that cast of characters. So I would not be surprised if next year there wasn't another Lorna adventure.
You heard it first here, folks. So that's great. We are out of time, but I would like to thank James Rollins and the producers for making Pet Peeves possible. I dare you to join me next week for Pet Peeves on Pet Life Radio for the next installment of What Hisses You Off. Email me suggestions or post a note to my blog by dialing up PetLifeRadio.com and clicking on the Pet Peeves logo. Woofs and purrs until next time. And for those of you who enjoy a thrilling read, you've got to look for Jim's latest book, Altar of Eden. Read it aloud to your furry crew. Well, and your feathered ones too, so they don't feel ignored. After all, we don't want them to get peeved.
That's it. You're madder than a junkyard dog, and you're not going to take it anymore. Your feathers are ruffled, your dander is up, and you've got a definite bone to pick. Join us each week on Pet Peeves, the show that lets you dig through the dirt and unleash your passion for pets. Your host, pet expert and award-winning author, Amy Shojai, will talk about what makes you howl and what hisses you off. Pet Peeves, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.